There's been a lot of apologizing this week. In Washington, as more allegations of sexual misconduct surfaced, three members of Congress announced they'd be stepping down. But if you look back at history, the public apology has never been America's strong suit. We're joined now by Brian Ballow and Joanne Freeman. They are historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Welcome back.
Hi, Jeremy.
Thanks for having us.
Well, and as we often do with the two of you, let's go back to the early days of the United States and 1791, when the Treasury Secretary, Alexander Hamilton, commits adultery and later confesses. Tell us what happened.
Yes, well, indeed. So he does commit adultery in 1791. In 1797, he's accused of financial corruption, of misusing treasury funds. People find little scraps of paper in which he appears to be giving money to somebody. And he steps forward and says, no, 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 I am an honest public servant, but I was committing adultery and paying blackmail payments. And that's what those little slips of paper are.
Yeah, by
so
the
he
way.
He writes a 95-page pamphlet with all kinds of proof and correspondence and the letters from the woman who he was sleeping with and everything else, Maria Reynolds, saying, look, really, I really, 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 really was committing adultery and was really, really not a corrupt public man. I was just a corrupt private man.
But and how did the public react?
Well, I mean, it's not really swimmingly wonderful for his reputation. It's worth noting that in that 95-page pamphlet, there's one thing that he doesn't say. I'm sorry.
Hmm. And then what about Grover Cleveland? When he was running for president in 1884, he faced some incredible accusations in the papers. What came out about him?
He did. This is quite a scandal. So he's running for president in 1884 as the Democratic candidate, and the Republicans unearthed this story that 10 years earlier, he had had an illegitimate child with a woman named Maria Halpin, and the child had ended up being adopted, taken away from the mother and adopted, and this is exposed that he is the father of this illegitimate child. He steps forward and says, well, okay, I did have an illegitimate child, but let me explain the real circumstance. This is a loose woman who we're talking about, and she was sleeping with many of my friends, and I was the only unmarried one, so I stepped forward and claimed paternity, and then I helped her find a proper home for the child. So he's trying to make himself look good, but then, of course, the press goes out and investigates and finds Maria Halpin, and she says, that's not quite it. She says, actually, he was pursuing me. He wanted to date me, and I finally gave in, and at the end of the date, he raped me. Hmm. And then I had a child, and then he took the child away from me and tried to get me committed to an insane asylum to cover over his mistake, which is stunningly shocking behavior. But of course, what happens in the end, I mean, he's running for president, is some people believe him, some don't. It largely breaks down along party lines. And in the end, he's running against James Blaine from the state of Maine, who's accused of financial corruption. And the public, given a choice between financially corrupt Blaine or sexually corrupt Cleveland, votes for Cleveland.
Hmm. And Jeremy, just to underscore that partisan framework, the Republicans come up with the chant, Ma, Ma, where's my pa? And after Cleveland wins, the Democrats respond. They complete what has become a famous phrase, and that's gone to the White House. Ha, ha, ha. Mm.
The long history of election snark.
Yeah, why don't we have those little limericks these days? They should come back.
We have Twitter instead.
Well, let's get to the 20th century, Brian. And Congressman Wilbur Mills of Arkansas, he was caught driving with a stripper. What happened?
Well, the stripper jumped out of the car. And by the way, Jeremy, she was an exotic dancer, not a stripper. And the Capitol Police found her in the tidal pool and took her back to the car where they found an inebriated Wilbur Mills. Initially, Mills denied that he was even there, or his spokespeople denied it. Eventually, the Capitol Police said, look, he was there. He was bleeding. He was intoxicated. One thing led to another, and eventually Wilbur Mills had to acknowledge that, in fact, he was caught with this woman in a very untoward situation. What really strikes me on our topic of apologies is how tepid his apology was. Mm. He did apologize to his constituents. He apologized to his wife. But then he said, and my poor wife was home with a foot injury, implying that if his wife had been there, this whole thing wouldn't have happened. Mm. If we look back, what looks good about Hamilton and all this stuff is at least he didn't try to shame his lover. But after Hamilton, we have a very long history, especially with Cleveland, but with Wilbur Mills, of basically blaming women of one sort or another. That's about as close as these men getting to apologies get.
Well, there's another important case that we have to talk about, one that many people know, and that is the case of Anita Hill and Justice Clarence Thomas. During his confirmation hearings in the early 90s, it came out that Thomas had allegedly harassed former aide Anita Hill, but he never apologized, did he?
He didn't come close to apologizing. He went on the attack, and he called any questioning on this topic a high-technology lynching. So far from apologizing, Clarence Thomas blamed the person who was accusing him. Anita Hill was questioned about the most intimate sexual things in her life, and she was questioned while her religious parents sat there in the audience. It was, at a minimum, incredibly humiliating and confirmed, again, a long line of blaming the women who came forward to be honest. And when people today ask, well, why didn't women come forward? I think we're giving a short history of what happens to women who come forward.
Except that I'm going to throw something in there. The fact of the matter is, I remember how searing that was, the Anita Hill testimony. And despite the fact that, of course, any woman would say, oh, heavens forbid I'm ever in that situation, she was such a powerful witness that it kind of made me feel not necessarily that I would do the same thing, but that there was a virtue in it that maybe I hadn't thought about before.
Well, Joanne, that's why I want to get to Senator Packwood.
Senator Bob Packwood of Oregon, who got into some trouble himself in the early 90s.
That's right. And Senator Packwood, a year after the Clarence Thomas hearings, started facing charges from staff members that he had used his position in order to force sex upon them. And in what might be seen as a precursor of many of the situations today, it wasn't just one woman who came forward. It was multiple women. Packwood responded just as we could have predicted. He said, hey, you know, I'm a progressive guy. I support women's issues. I would never do anything like this. And increasing numbers of women came forward. The Senate's Ethics Committee looked into it, and they subpoenaed and obtained Packwood's diary, where he bragged about, in essence, sexually assaulting dozens and dozens of women. The day of or the day after that diary was obtained, Packwood resigned. Although I should add, he went on to be a rather successful lobbyist after he resigned from the Senate. What does this have to do with Clarence Thomas? I think that coming a year after the Clarence Thomas hearing, there were a lot of women who watched what happened to Anita Hill, and they were much more motivated and encouraged, and it took a lot of courage to come forward.
It seems like the larger picture here, though, is that Americans, going all the way back to the beginning, don't really like to apologize for things.
Exactly, exactly. And I think there is an addendum here, Jeremy, on the question of apologies. Years after the Clarence Thomas hearings, Clarence Thomas's wife called Anita Hill, left a message on her machine, and asked Anita Hill to apologize for what she had done. So let's not say there's not a demand for apologies. It just is not always directed at the right people.
That's Brian Ballow and Joanne Freeman, historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks for having
Jeremy.
Us.